Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
We don't consider it a failure when folks are alerted to a tsunami warning that aren't in the warning area.
A tsunami warning Saturday night startled even South Central residents who were not in danger. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, July 17th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, an Aleutian volcano erupted Saturday night.
It's a pretty active place. We have a lot of earthquakes too. We have exciting weather all the time. It's part of the Alaska experience, I think.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Quality childcare creates futures for families, children, and the state's economy. When children are safe, engaged, and learning, parents can work and everyone has a better outcome. THREAD has resources to support your family in their childcare search. Knowing what to look for in a licensed facility is important for the safety of your children. THREAD also offers parenting resources and support. To learn more about quality childcare in Alaska, visit threadalaska.org. This message sponsored by THREAD.
Cell phones across a huge swath of Alaska beeped awake Saturday night with an urgent tsunami warning. Move to high ground or inland now, it said, and you are in danger. Some people were supposed to get the message, like those living in Sand Point and Kodiak, but others, like Anchorage residents, were not. And as Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports, emergency officials are once again trying to figure out why.
The alerts went out a bit before 11 p.m., shortly after a magnitude 7.2 earthquake was detected 55 miles southwest of Sand Point. Mark Roberts runs the State Emergency Operations Center. On Monday, he said they know the phone alerts fired where they were supposed to, but also in places they were not supposed to, like Anchorage.
The system worked. It just worked larger area than it should have. Our default is always to be safe. So we don't consider it a failure when folks are alerted to a tsunami warning that aren't in the warning area.
Robert says it isn't clear yet who was affected that shouldn't have been, or how many devices were activated. The system doesn't give that sort of feedback. Broader versions of this played out in Alaska after earthquakes and tsunami warnings in 2018 and 2020. People got the alert who didn't live where a tsunami could hit. Roberts says a lot of debriefs are underway with officials from multiple agencies. He says the National Phone Alert System has been being refined for more precise geographic targeting, but those improvements don't always work on Alaska infrastructure.
And that's something the National Weather Service is investigating this morning for the reasons for that and whether there's any refinements that can be made towards that.
He says there are a lot of variables that affect who receives the signal, including your phone carrier, what type of phone you have, how far from a cell phone tower you are, and the tower itself. Robert says decisions to sound tsunami sirens, order evacuations, and activate shelters were up to local officials in each community. Sirens wailed in Homer and Sand Point. In Kodiak, city police asked residents to go to high ground and stay there. Over the next 2 hours, the National Tsunami Warning Center put out revised advice on its website, narrowing the areas expected to be affected. And on Twitter, the National Weather Service sent out a string of messages about who, despite the initial phone alert, would not see impacts, like Anchorage residents. A wave eventually hit King Cove and Sand Point. It was only 6 inches high. Roberts cautioned that it's important for Alaskans to remain vigilant. When earthquakes happen close to coastal areas, he says tsunamis can arrive faster than emergency messages. He says if an earthquake is strong enough to knock you off your feet or shakes you for more than 20 seconds,
you need to use that as your warning and take action to get to high ground. There may not be time for the tsunami warning to be disseminated.
Destructive tsunamis in Alaska are rare. The last death attributed to a tsunami in Alaska was in Skagway in 1994. A massive underwater landslide along Skagway's harbor sent a roughly 30-foot wave across the waterfront, killing a construction worker from Homer and causing more than $20 million of damage. The next most recent fatal tsunami event followed the Good Friday earthquake in 1964. Federal officials attribute 106 deaths in Alaska to that tsunami. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
One Kodiak resident died in a hit and run during this weekend's tsunami warning and evacuation. KMXT's Brian Venwa reports police have already contacted a suspect.
Kodiak police have identified the pedestrian who died Saturday night as 45-year-old Vanessa Jean Amox. Friends on Facebook identified the victim of the hit and run by the name Vanessa Malutin McCormick. She was hit by a truck near downtown Kodiak within a half hour of the sirens going off. Police solicited the public's help to find the suspect that night. Lieutenant Francis De La Fuente is a public information officer for the Kodiak Police Department. He says witness accounts and private security cameras helped their search.
We've located the truck, the guy, our patrol division and detective was able to piece together the parts and was able to track the vehicle that same night. And we were able to communicate and make the interview ready.
De La Fuente thanked the public for their help so far. He says the investigation is ongoing and no one has yet been charged. De La Fuente says traffic was heavier than during previous emergency warnings, partly because more people were downtown.
We had a lot of people walking, going up to the high school from downtown, and it was a Saturday. We have apartment complexes from the canneries and businesses downtown that we needed to evacuate.
He says one big systemic difference this time was the text notifications from the National Weather Service that buzzed residents' phones before the sirens went off.
The biggest difference for me personally was the notification from the state when we all have our phones have that obnoxious beep that everybody hears to wake you up that there is a tsunami. Then we followed up with the tsunami siren.
The department recommends residents maintain emergency preparation kits to include 2 weeks' worth of supplies like clothes, water, and food to prepare for future tsunamis. Since Saturday, some people have left flowers near the accident site. A GoFundMe was also shared on social media to help Amox's family cover funeral expenses. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venwa.
Alaska Volcano Observatory officials say Saturday night's 7.2 earthquake that happened near Sand Point was not related to an ongoing eruption at nearby Mount Shishaldin, nor did the earthquake trigger a large ash eruption, even though they were just hours apart. The volcano on Unimak Island emitted a continuous ash plume, raising alert levels Saturday night. The high alert lasted a few hours until explosive activity declined. There were no reports of ashfall in nearby communities, the closest one being False Pass, 23 miles away. Experts will continue monitoring the volcano. Shishaldin activity changes quickly, says Nick Schwartz, lead forecaster for the National Weather Service.
This morning, I mean, it went from basically nothing to a plume at a height of over 35,000 feet in a matter of 10 minutes.
Hannah Dietrich is a research geophysicist with the U.S. Geological Survey. She says Shishaldin is what they call an open system.
The pathway of magma to the surface is relatively almost easy. So those eruptions can happen with less warning time than other systems.
Dietrich says volcanic eruptions can last for many months, so be prepared, whether it be to protect yourself from ashfall or to be flexible with your travel plans due to possible flight cancellations.
It's a pretty active place. We have a lot of earthquakes, too. We have exciting weather all the time. It's part of the Alaska experience, I think.
You can stay up to date or minute by minute on volcanic eruptions with the Alaska Volcano Observatory online at avo.alaska.edu. The Alaska Marine Highway System might have to stop some sailings next week as the state ferry system's hiring woes continue through the peak summer travel season. The Alaska Beacon reports that this summer, Alaska's ferry system is running only 6 of its 9 available ships. 2 have been laid up for mechanical work, and the ocean-going ferry Kennecott has been sidelined because there aren't enough trained crew to operate it. The ferry system's hiring issues are the result of a combination of factors, including a global shortage of maritime workers and problems on the state side. Among the biggest issues is a flawed payroll system, which Director Craig Tornga said has left some ferry workers' pay delayed. The local union hall of the Marine Engineers Beneficial Association is urging members to not sign with the ferry system, Tornga said, because of those payroll delays. In May of 2022, 60% of the ferry system's jobs were vacant, the highest vacancy rate among any state agency. Tornga said the agency was full on entry-level positions aboard ships, but is continuing to suffer shortages among licensed positions. Tornga and members of the ferry board noted that competition for licensed mariners has gotten so intense nationally that even the federal government is now offering extraordinary bonuses and pay for those jobs. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Alaska Railroad celebrates 100 years in Nenana.
It did not take long for the site to become a hub for transportation, by cart, by plane, by boat, or by train.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Two Fairbanks residents are accused of selling illegal Alaska big game hunts. A criminal complaint filed in U.S. District Court last week details charges against Jun Liang and Brian Phelan, including conspiracy, wire fraud, and attempted violation of the Federal Lacey Act, which prohibits the trade of illegally harvested wildlife. Liang, the owner of Fairbanks-based AK Aurora Travel, is additionally accused of wire fraud, money laundering, and illegal possession of a firearm by an alien. An affidavit in support of the complaint says Liang and Phelan marketed guiding services on a Chinese Mandarin language social media site. Among their clients were two undercover federal agents, who they guided on a $60,000 bear hunt in the Quartz Lake area north of Delta Junction last fall. It says Liang and Phelan are not licensed guides and lied to secure state hunting licenses for clients. No bears were killed during the hunt, though. According to the charging document, Liang offered to buy and sell bear gallbladders and provide the clients with prostitutes. Temperatures are heating up and more visitors are traveling to Northwest Alaska. But not all of them are welcome. Some end up destroying living things in their path, permanently changing the landscape, causing harm to those that call the region home. And once they've settled in, it's nearly impossible to get rid of these invasive species. As KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, while the Arctic is largely untouched by these ecological threats, climate change and development could easily help invasives gain a foothold.
In a short time, invasive species can permanently change an ecosystem's flora and fauna, displacing key species and subsistence food sources. Right now, the fragile Arctic ecosystem is mostly free from some of the more devastating invasives, but that doesn't mean they are not a threat. That's according to Katie Spellman, a research associate and professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Right now, most of the plants that are in the tundra-dominated ecosystems of Alaska are the lesser threatening species. It is one of the few places on Earth where the really threatening species are not there yet.
However, plants like Elodia, if introduced, could decimate subsistence staples. The aquatic freshwater plant is commonly used as an ornamental in aquariums. If introduced to the wild, it can quickly overtake salmon, whitefish, or grayling spawning grounds. Spellman says Arctic ecosystems, including the plants and animals harvested for traditional food, can be particularly vulnerable.
We don't want our foods to be affected. They're already going through a lot with climate change, and so this is like icing on the cake, you know?
Once established, the fast-growing Elodia blocks light, choking other plants, creating what's called a monoculture. That's where a single plant or organism dominates the environment. Spellman says Elodia can make bodies of water difficult for native fish and other aquatic organisms to survive. It's identified by densely packed leaves in whorls of three or four along long, slender, and sometimes branched stems. In Alaska, Elodia has been found as far north as Fairbanks. But Spellman says without education and as Arctic temperatures warm, If introduced, Elodia could easily clog waterways, suffocating aquatic environments.
The marine species, they can travel really quickly, especially hitchhiking on boats and in the ballast water of boats.
She says Elodia can also be spread by float planes. Statewide, scientists have been on high alert for another aquatic invader, European green crabs, which can also be carried in the bilge systems of boats. The invasive crabs were discovered for the first time in Alaska in the southeast community of Metlakatla last summer. But Spellman says the crabs are also a threat to the colder waters in western Alaska. Since most of rural Alaska is unconnected by roads, boats are one of the main methods for invasives to travel. Some are hitching rides in the boats themselves, inside barges or shipping containers.
Rats are really good at getting on boats and getting to places like St. Paul Island found a rat in the past, and they, set off the alarm bells because rats are a real threat to seabird populations.
Even smaller invaders can infiltrate. Invasive seeds and plant matter often hide inside equipment. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
A new facility providing shelter and job training opportunities broke ground Friday in Wasilla. Michelle Overstreet is the founder and executive director of My House, the organization sponsoring the $23 million project. Overstreet says it will serve people aged 14 to 25 and is modeled after an award-winning apartment building on Skid Row in Los Angeles.
What makes that building unique is that it has retail shops on the main floor and then wraparound services and housing on the upper floors, so that when you move somebody in who is houseless, they have the opportunity for job training in the businesses on the main floor.
The Wasilla project, called the Carson Cottle Center, will include treatment programs for substance abuse and sex trafficking, a recovery high school, and permanent supportive housing. On the main floor, Overstreet says the tenants will include a restaurant and a clothing store. The project came about, she says, because Senator Lisa Murkowski knew she kept a photo of the Los Angeles apartment building on her office wall. Then, one day, Overstreet says Murkowski called.
And she said, Michelle, we've got an appropriation opportunity coming up, and I really would like you to apply. And I said, really? And she said, yes, I want you to dream big and send me something awesome.
Murkowski included the project on her list of earmark requests for a federal spending bill last year. The center is slated to open in September 2025.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's environment and economy and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help prevent the spread of invasive species by remembering to play clean go, removing all plants, animals, and mud from boots, gear, and vehicles before entering and leaving recreational areas will help stop invasive species in their tracks. Learn more at playcleango.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
The 100th anniversary of completion of the Alaska Railroad was celebrated in Nenana on Saturday. Local, state, and federal officials gathered with the public to mark 100 years since President Warren Harding drove the Golden Spike that officially finished the line between Seward and Fairbanks on July 15, 1923. In remarks at Saturday's event, Native Village of Nenana First Chief Carolyn Ketzler talked about the community's long transportation history.
My ancestors called this land Nenana, a good place to camp between rivers. It did not take long for the site to become a hub for transportation. By cart, by plane, by boat, or by train.
A group of state legislators presented the Alaska Railroad with a citation, which was read by Fairbanks Representative Ashley Carrick.
The railroad and its builders, operators, and leaders have been one of the foundations of the state's development, supporting war efforts, transporting passengers between Alaska's largest cities, helping build the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, investing in real estate, and facilitating tourism and commerce across miles of remote and wild landscapes.
Among other speakers, Federal Railroad Administration Administrator Amit Bose, who traveled from Washington, D.C. to celebrate the centennial, touted the railroad's value to Alaska and the nation.
Thanks to the Alaska Railroad, new possibilities for trade, transportation, and tourism have flourished not only for this region, but for the country.
Bose said rail's power and potential remain despite all that's changed over the last 100 years. Alaska Railroad Board Chairman John Shively looked to the railroad's future.
The resources that are still in the ground here are worth billions, if not trillions of dollars. And so there's just huge opportunity. And the railroad, I know, is going to play along a big part of that.
Saturday's festivities included the ceremonial driving of golden spikes by the Federal Railroad Administration's Bose, Governor Mike Dunleavy, and Alaska U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan. The event also marked 100 years since famed pilot Carl Ben Eielson's historic flight from Fairbanks to Nenana, which led to development of commercial aviation in the state. It's called Weaving Our Pride, a year-long blanket weaving project that celebrates Juneau's LGBTQ+ community, led by master Thlinget weaver Lily Hope. So, who can be a part of the project?
Every person who wants to be part of something bigger.
Hope says the project gives youth of all identities and supportive adults a chance to sit side by side to create a shared work celebrating pride, community, and self. The work is now underway. Over the next year, a team of 6 weavers will spend several days a week at the Zach Gordon Youth Center to assist in making 2 blankets, one in the traditional Raven's Tale style and the other in the more modern Chilkat style.
We're going to do bands of rainbow color and do a follow the leader kind of deal. So the mentor weaver will weave one row and the student will come behind and weave exactly the same row. Anyway, it's going to be pretty epic.
Next summer, dancers will wear them for the first time at Celebration, a biennial Southeast Native dance festival held in Juneau. After celebration, the robes will remain at the Youth Center to be worn for special ceremonies that include new names and coming out parties, as well as significant pride events. Only young people can wear them.
The cool thing is that 3 of these 6 mentor weavers identify as queer. 1 mentor weaver has queer children. And the space that's being held by these weavers is safe, healing, affirmative, inspiring.
Hope says in traditional Southeast Native cultures, weavers were taught that their work was a sacred art, in which they were instructed to never to weave in anger, but instead channel prayers and feelings of love into their work. Hope believes projects like Weaving Our Pride can bring positive, lasting change to the community. Well, depending on who you ask, Homer is known by a lot of different names. Cosmic Hamlet by the Sea, or Halibut Fishing Capital of the World. Now, for the 4th year in a row, it's also the City of Peonies. Homer is in the midst of its annual peony celebration, which takes place through the month of July. So how did this little Alaska city at the end of the road become such a peony hub? Sabine Pooks reports for KBBI.
Alaska's commercial peony story actually starts in Homer. Rita Jo Schultz runs Alaska Perfect Peony on East End Road, on a property she's lived on for decades. Walking through her first ever peony field, she says she first started growing peonies almost 20 years ago after talking to a friend and researcher at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, who was growing them in the botanical gardens there.
Realized that our peonies are coming to season when fresh-cut peonies aren't available anywhere else in the world. So that was a niche, obviously.
Maybe not so obvious to the average person, but it was to Rita Jo Schultz. And that seasonality is what makes Alaska's peonies so special. Peonies like the cold. In Alaska, they grow slower and larger, and they're usually ready to pick in early July, months later than other peony hubs, and just in time for the midsummer wedding season. In her first few years growing, Schultz says there was a big learning curve.
And I did a lot of lecturing all over the state, you know, because it was a pretty hot topic. And I had slideshows and that kind of stuff, and just telling people what I'd learned, and so they wouldn't make the same mistake I did.
Today, there are over 200 peony growers in Alaska. And because Homer was the birthplace of Alaska peonies, then-Mayor Brian Zack designated Homer the city of peonies in 2019. Today, it has 26 peony farms, says Jan Knudsen, who directs the Homer Chamber Visitor Center in town and staffs the Homer Peony Task Force. But she says it wasn't until the pandemic that Homer's identity as a city of peonies really began to crystallize.
One of the goals of the Peony Task Force was to have a peony celebration or a peony festival. And then we were hit with the pandemic, the COVID pandemic 4 years ago.
Knudsen says the Homer Chamber of Commerce was looking at events it could hold outdoors.
I picked up the phone and I called Rita Jo and I said, is this a good time to start having some farm tours? Because they're all outdoors, women and men can be spaced. And she said, absolutely.
The chamber brought in businesses all over town. Today, local manufacturer Nomar makes peony bags. Local breweries and meaderies craft special peony-inspired beverages. The Chamber of Commerce also works with local artists to draw up festival designs and logos. Knudsen says the peony celebration honors an industry that has become significant in Homer, both because of peony exports and the tourism it brings.
People are scheduling their vacations in the lower 48 just to come here for the peony festival. That especially started last year.
Schultz's farm is one of several doing farm tours for the festival. This year, they had to push some tours later in the season due to the historically cold summer weather that's delaying harvests all over South Central. Alaska Perfect Peony also sells flowers to the lower 48, and Schultz says she's not sure they've ever been so late to get shipments out the door.
So, and it's, tell you, it is no fun to call a bride and say, guess what, we don't have any peonies for you, you know.
She says this year her flowers will be ready later in the season, when they'll still be in demand and will be even rarer and more valuable for buyers. But it does create an issue for her staff.
Because you plan on your season and you hire your people and then, you don't, you know, there's no flowers now. So we've been doing work in the gardens and then they're going to be gone when the flowers start coming in.
But now that she's not the only game in town anymore, she sends brides up to Fairbanks, where the flowers are ready for picking. A lot has changed since Schultz, now 81, first started farming. But one thing hasn't. She says she doesn't plan to stop working on her farm anytime soon.
I do. You'll probably find me out in the field someday all withered up, you know, dead. But, yeah, I love it, and it keeps me in good shape, keeps me healthy.
Homer's peony celebration, including farm tours at Alaska Perfect Peony, continues through the end of the month. You can find more on the Homer Chamber of Commerce website. In Homer, I'm Sabine Pooks.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Jeremy Shea, Liz Ruskin, and Rhonda McBride in Anchorage, Brian Venwa in Kodiak, Sophia Stewart-Rossi in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, and Sabine Pooks in Homer. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.